Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. And in the studio with me this morning is Dr. Walter Hall, neurosurgeon and chair of neurosurgery at SUNY Upstate. Good morning, Dr. Hall.
Good morning.
And welcome. I'm glad you could join us this morning. You're the gentleman that when somebody says, well, you know, it's not exactly brain surgery, for you it is, isn't it?
Usually on a daily basis.
On a daily basis. You're a relative newcomer to Central New York?
Yes. I've been here as of April 2 years.
2 years. And actually, you've had quite a journey to get here. Tell us some of the other places you've been.
Well, I went to medical school and college in New York City at Columbia. And then I did my neurosurgical training at the University of Pittsburgh. And prior to coming here, I was on the faculty of the University of Minnesota for 16 years.
Well, so you were there a long time. So you're used to snow and cold.
Yeah, that didn't scare me off.
It didn't
scare
you off.
For coming to Syracuse.
And you actually spent some time in Oslo, Norway as well?
In 1990, I did a brain tumor fellowship at the Norwegian Radium Hospital and was there for about 9 months.
Wow, interesting. And you were at the National Institutes of Health.
As a neurosurgical medical staff fellow, I was there for 2 years from 1987 to 1989.
Well, I raise all of this because one of the things we like to mention to people is what we call our brain gain here in Central New York. You know, for so many years, people have complained that smart people are leaving Central New York, and that really isn't true. We're really glad to have you here.
Well, thank you.
Neurosurgery is one of those things that we think we know what it means. And when I think of neurosurgery, I think of brain surgery, but it's bigger than that, isn't it?
Neurosurgery is really surgery of the nervous system, so it includes not only the brain, but the spinal cord as well as the peripheral nerves.
And, you know, we had Dr. Ross Moquin here, this has probably been a year and a half or so ago, talking about some of the surgery he did with soldiers from Iraq when he was in Germany, and with some other surgeries as well. He's one of your colleagues.
Yes, he does primarily our very complex sophisticated spinal surgery,
right,
and deformity correction surgery.
Well, speak to us now. We know about his surgery. Speak to us about the kinds of surgeries you do.
Well, primarily I specialize in taking out brain tumors. Primary brain tumors are the ones that arise in the brain. Brain metastases are brain tumors that actually go to the brain. And one of the newer techniques we've been actually doing for the last couple of years is endoscopic pituitary surgery, where we use an endoscope to actually take pituitary tumors out through one nostril.
Oh my gosh. Where is a pituitary tumor usually located?
A pituitary tumor is located at the skull base. It's right between the eyes, and it's at the point that intersects right in front of the ear. So it's down right at the base of the brain. And so during that type of surgery, you actually don't see the brain at all. You actually just bypass the brain by going underneath the brain through the nose and making a little window in the skull base and then scooping out the pituitary tumor.
Oh my gosh. Now, it sounds then like you're not even making an incision?
No, there's no incisions at all. I will say I also do this with a colleague in otolaryngology, Dr. Perul Goyal.
Well, that's great. Dr. Goyal will be here in our next segment. But now tell me, that when somebody has symptoms and how do they even know to come to you that they might have a brain tumor?
The symptoms for brain tumor are pretty characteristic. The lower grade tumors, which we see a fair number of, present either with a seizure in about 90% of patients, or they're found incidentally when somebody gets a scan for another reason, such as an automobile accident. The higher grade tumors tend to be more rapidly growing, and the symptoms are generally present on the order of about 3 months. And the most common symptoms that we see are headache, weakness in one side of the body, and seizure activity.
So we know that Senator Edward Kennedy has a brain tumor. We've heard about his brain tumor. Is this the kind of tumor that you're talking about?
His type of tumor is actually the most common brain tumor that neurosurgeons see. It represents about 50% of brain tumors, and it's a very highly aggressive malignant tumor called a glioblastoma.
And evidently, they're not operable.
They're not completely resectable, but many of them can be removed in part. The problem with that individual type of tumor is it likes to grow back because it has little rootlets or tentacles that infiltrate into the normal surrounding brain.
So it's not like it's in one place and you can just pull it all out. It's we think of, say, like a tick, and you pull a tick out, but part of it gets left behind.
That's correct.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Are all brain tumors malignant?
No. There's a large number of benign tumors, things like pituitary adenomas, meningiomas that come from the covering of the brain. And in fact, in some children, there's some low-grade tumors like a juvenile pilocytic tumor that's potentially curable with a complete surgical resection.
Really? And what happens when somebody has one of these surgeries? Now, you talked about the pituitary one, which I find that fascinating that you're just pulling it out through somebody's nose. But what about some of these others? I mean, I imagine that they involve long-term care. You're cutting them open, you're pulling things out of their brain. It's very frightening sounding.
Well, again, it depends on the type of brain tumor. For some of the lower grade tumors, if we can get a complete resection, we basically just follow the patient afterwards.
When you say resection, can you elaborate on that?
Resection is basically a removal of a tumor.
I see. Okay.
So if we can get a complete radiographic removal where we don't see anything on the MRI scan afterwards, then we may just follow the patient with sequential MRI scans that are done at 3, 6, and 12-month intervals. For the malignant type of tumors where we're concerned about regrowth, we will often treat the patient after surgery with radiation therapy to the brain, which involves only part of the brain, not the entire brain, followed by some type of chemotherapy. And the most common chemotherapy that's used is an oral pill called temozolomide.
Oh, really? So they're not there sitting in a chemo lab somewhere?
No, they take these pills 5 days in a row every month for a year, and they don't make patients sick. They don't make their hair fall out.
Wow.
Generally, the patients take them just before bedtime.
Really? I mean, you make it sound, I hate to say this, you make it sound so simple to have a brain tumor.
Well, the actual treatment for brain tumors nowadays has become very standardized, and patients are doing much better than they used to do.
That's amazing. So we don't want to make light of it, certainly, but it does sound very hopeful for people who might have these kinds of symptoms. I imagine that people come to you scared as can be.
Virtually every one of them has not slept for days before the clinical appointment.
Sure. And then how quickly, once you get them in and you're able to do, some of the MRIs and those kinds of things, how quickly do things move along?
Well, if it looks like it's an aggressive tumor, we try to schedule surgery within usually a few days. If it's something where there's a lot of displacement of the brain or potentially blockage of the spinal fluid, we may operate on them either the same day or the next day.
Wow. So you really do take care of them quickly. Now, I know that when I was reading up and checking up on you before we started talking this morning, I learned that you actually pioneered a form of neurosurgery called intraoperative MRI-guided neurosurgery. What's that all about?
Well, I was fortunate in that in 1997, I was involved with the development of an operating room at the University of Minnesota, where we had an MRI scanner actually in the operating room, where you could do surgery within the magnetic field and during the operative procedure, with the head still open and the brain still exposed, you could confirm radiographically whether you had completely removed the brain tumor that you were intending to take out.
Oh, my gosh. And so you're standing right inside the MRI?
You're right next to the MRI scanner. Patient is under anesthesia. The patient's head is open. Often we'll place a towel over it during the scanning sequences. And then once we interpret the scans, we can see whether there's any residual tumor that we can go immediately back in and remove.
Wow. How many of those kinds of procedures would you do in a year? I mean, it would seem like you would want to have that opportunity for anybody who had a brain tumor, but how many people actually have a brain tumor, say, in central New York?
Well, excuse me, within the United States, we see about 17,000 primary brain tumors per year. I was seeing approximately about 25 new tumors a month.
A month?
A month.
Oh, my gosh. So how many of those surgeries are you doing in a month?
Well, usually I would probably take out, I would say, 4 tumors a week.
Wow. So, and that translates back to those numbers you were talking about, where about 50% of people have a tumor that really isn't operable?
That's correct. A lot of them tend to be deep-seated, or they're very near to eloquent areas.
Now, what do you mean by an eloquent area?
An eloquent area is an area of the brain that has high neurological function, such as speech function, communication, vision, or movement.
I see. So you avoid tumors that are going to affect
that are actually so close to those areas. Although I would say we developed a technique sort of as an out branching of the intraoperative MR-guided surgery where we would do functional MRI-guided surgery. We could actually identify the areas of the brain that had motor function, short-term memory, as well as speech function, and we could avoid those during the operative procedure using the MRI scanner. And in those patients, we actually never had a long-term neurological deficit after the procedure.
That's fabulous. And we've talked about functional MRIs before. It's a fascinating science. It almost, when you combine them, it almost sounds science fiction. It's wonderful. It's actually wonderful that we've made those advances. Now, I also read recently that you're using a gamma knife, and just briefly, the gamma knife is a form of radiation.
Yeah, the gamma knife is a focused radiation technique that can deliver a very high dose of radiation to a discrete area. And because the dose is so high, it can actually obliterate the lesion that you're treating.
That's fabulous. I want to talk more about this gamma knife. We are running out of time for right now. Would you be able to come back another day?
Oh, I'd be delighted to.
Well, Dr. Walter Hall, Chair of Neurosurgery at Upstate, thanks so much for coming by this morning. We'll look forward to another visit.
It's my pleasure.
And listeners, we're going to take a quick break. Please stay with us. This is SUNY Upstate Medical University's HealthLink On Air on 570 WSYR.